You look under the hood of the web and you find these completely hidden machines.
Right, the ones where the engine is just fully exposed.
Exactly. Your hands are covered in grease, and the thing has somehow been running nonstop since, like, the late 90s. Today, we are taking a deep dive into one of those foundational engines.
Yeah, an open-source webmail client called SquirrelMail.
Which, by the way, proudly boasts the tagline, "Webmail for Nuts."
I love that.
But, maintaining that kind of total granular control over your own technology is a vastly different philosophy of ownership compared to the sleek walled garden apps most people use today.
It represents a fundamental shift in how you interact with your digital infrastructure. You aren't just renting space, you actually own the underlying mechanics.
Which is a concept that ties directly into our sponsor for this deep dive, SafeServer. When you rely on sealed-off, highly expensive proprietary tools, like Microsoft Exchange or Google Workspace, you are fundamentally giving up control over your own system.
SafeServer is really the key to replacing those proprietary giants with secure, open-source alternatives.
Right. And for organizations making that switch, the cost difference alone is massive.
Oh, absolutely.
But beyond just saving the budget, if you operate under strict legal, regulatory, or compliance requirements, things like mandatory email retention, securing financial records, maintaining audit trails, and ensuring strict data protection, you need a concept called data sovereignty.
Right. Data sovereignty basically dictates that you have total, unquestioned authority over where your data physically lives and who has the keys to access it.
Because when you drop your organization's emails into a massive public cloud, that data is bouncing across servers globally.
Yeah, subject to terms of service that can just change overnight.
Exactly. SafeServer helps organizations find, implement, and run the perfect open source solutions to keep that data firmly under your roof, operating securely on German servers.
They handle the entire process from the initial consulting phase right through to full day-to-day operation.
You can learn more and take back your data at www.safeserver.de. And understanding the reality of what it takes to run that kind of independent open source software is our exact mission today.
We're looking at a really fascinating stack of sources for this. It's a collection of update logs, news posts, and plugin directories spanning from 1999 all the way up to 2021.
Mostly authored by a core project team member named Paul Lesniewski.
Right.
The goal here is to give you an easy, beginner-friendly entry point into understanding what this software actually is.
Why it built such a fiercely dedicated following.
Yeah, and what it truly takes to maintain a passion-driven open source project for over two decades.
It's a massive undertaking.
It really is.
Yeah.
And having Hollywood fame and a passionate community actually creates a very specific kind of footprint. SquirrelMail feels like the trusty, indestructible vintage car of the internet.
That's a great analogy.
It might not look like a glowing spaceship, but it has genuine movie credits.
Yeah.
On November 17, 2010, Paul Lesniewski posted an update noting that SquirrelMail made not one but two cameos in the hit movie The Social Network.
Oh, wow. The David Fincher film about the origin of Facebook?
Yeah.
That detail perfectly grounds the software in its historical reality. I mean, if you were a tech-savvy college student or startup founder in the early 2000s, you weren't using a slick corporate webmail interface.
Right.
You were running your own server, and you were almost certainly using SquirrelMail to communicate.
Paul Lesniewski even joked in that update that he was still waiting for someone to contact the team regarding their cut of the box office.
I'm guessing he's still waiting.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And the community surrounding the software was massive.
Fast forward to August 6, 2012. SquirrelMail gets nominated for the SourceForge Project of the Month.
Now, SourceForge is essentially a massive directory and repository for open source software.
Right, and Paul notes it had been 9.5 years since their last nomination. They ended up taking a very respectable third place, narrowly losing to a project called PZIP.
Which highlights the wonderfully quirky naming conventions of the open source world.
What's fascinating here is that this entirely reframes how we think about software development.
How so?
Well, this isn't a corporate product pushed by a massive marketing department with a $1 billion budget. It is a strictly community-driven tool.
Right. The copyright from 1999 to 2016 is credited simply to the SquirrelMail project team.
Exactly. It's built on a foundation of donations, bounties, where users pool money to pay for specific features to be coded, and community votes.
So the developers are accountable directly to the people using the software, not to a board of shareholders demanding quarterly profit margins.
Yeah. But, having that level of fame and that vast of a user base creates a massive problem.
It makes you a highly visible target for hackers.
Exactly.
I mean, a 1999 codebase is a sitting duck on the modern web. The internet of 1999 is a completely different landscape than the internet of 2011, let alone today.
This is where the romance of the indestructible vintage car collides with the gritty reality of server administration and cybersecurity.
Yeah.
As the internet evolved, the attacks became significantly more sophisticated.
On July 12, 2011, there was a major announcement, the release of Squirrel Mail, version 1.4.22.
A critical update.
Very. The release notes detail crucial security patches for harsh XSS or cross-site scripting bugs, message sanitizing, and a general clickjacking vulnerability.
For anyone unfamiliar with the mechanics of XSS, it involves an attacker hiding a tiny, invisible string of malicious code inside an email message.
Right.
If the webmail software doesn't properly sanitize or scrub that message clean before rendering it on your screen, your web browser might accidentally execute that hidden code.
Because the browser thinks it's just following instructions from the website.
Exactly. Suddenly, the attacker could steal your secure login session, quietly read your private emails, or send messages pretending to be you.
It weaponizes the email itself. And the clickjacking vulnerability is equally insidious.
Sure.
An attacker layers an invisible, malicious button over a legitimate button on your screen.
Right. So you think you're clicking reply, but you're actually clicking a hidden trigger that forwards your entire inbox to a third party.
Wow. Fixing these vulnerabilities is absolute life or death for a software project that handles private communications.
Webmail clients are massive targets for these specific attacks because their entire operational purpose is to take unknown, untrusted data from strangers' emails and display it directly on your screen.
But implementing these fixes wasn't just a matter of hitting an update button for the server administrator.
Oh, no, no.
In open source software, a fix for one system can often be a breaking change for another because the ecosystem is heavily fragmented.
Right. In version 1.4.22, they fixed a bug to standardize how the folder list displays.
But in doing so, they essentially broke the layout for administrators who were using a specific mail protocol called Courier IMP.
Yeah, the special folders like trash, drafts, and sent would just stop appearing at the top of the user's list.
And the instructions for fixing it reveal the intense friction of legacy open source maintenance. The update notes that if the upgrade prevents users from logging in, giving them an error about an invalid mailbox name for the trash folder,
the administrator has to drop down into the raw command line to fix it.
Literally. Instead of a modern app that updates itself, the administrator had to command the server to hunt through thousands of individual user files.
Like a librarian manually searching for one specific typo in every single book in a massive building.
Just to fix a broken trash folder. They were running system-wide search and replace scripts to rewrite folder paths using commands like sed dash dash in place.
Or dropping into database terminals to manually rewrite SQL queries just to point the system back to the sent folder, like updating the user prefs table.
Right, or changing configuration variables, like setting default sub of inbox from false to true. Okay, let's unpack this. Wait, so if a folder disappears, an administrator has to spend their afternoon writing database queries just to help a user find their trash folder. Isn't that overwhelmingly complicated for a normal organization?
Sounds like it.
Why would a business choose to endure that kind of friction instead of just paying for a slick, automated service where this happens invisibly behind the scenes?
Well, that friction is the crucial trade-off of open source software. What looks like an overwhelming burden to a beginner is actually the software's greatest strategic advantage.
How does that work?
Having granular access to those raw database files and user preference tables is a feature, not a bug.
So it's like proprietary software is like staying in a luxury hotel. Room service is great, the bed is made for you every day, but management holds the master key.
Right. They can enter your room, monitor your usage, or kick you out if they change their policies.
Open source is like building your own cabin in the woods. It might be drafty and you have to chop your own wood to stay warm, but nobody can ever lock you out of your own home.
That analogy captures it perfectly. When you use a proprietary service, you have zero visibility into how they structure or store your data.
You cannot easily export it. You cannot reconfigure the database to meet specific local compliance laws.
And you cannot guarantee the provider isn't scanning your communication patterns to train their algorithms.
Right. With Squirrel Mail, you own the building. You dictate the data structure. If you want to audit who logged in and when, the raw logs are sitting right there on your hard drive.
It connects directly back to the concept of data sovereignty. You're trading automated convenience for absolute, uncompromised control.
But if the core software requires that much manual tuning just to keep basic folders visible, how does it adapt to the modern internet? Because user expectations don't stand still.
No, they don't. People want modern features.
Exactly.
The answer lies in its modularity. The architecture was designed to snap together like building blocks,
allowing the community to constantly iterate without having to rewrite the foundational engine every single time.
Yes.
Looking at the sources, there is a vast plugin ecosystem that was furiously active between 2011 and 2014. You had plugins for per-recipient sent folders, so you could organize outgoing mail based on who you sent it to.
Very handy.
A multiple attachments plugin, an autocomplete plugin for email addresses, which we treat as a basic human right today, and a junk email filter.
But the most crucial developments were the security plugins.
In March 2014, they released version 1.0 of a YubiKey hardware authentication plugin.
A YubiKey is a physical USB device you plug into your machine to cryptographically prove it's really you logging in. It's an incredibly robust form of multi-factor authentication.
And back in 2012, they also added an S/MIME verification plugin, allowing users to handle heavy-duty email encryption and digital signatures.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this modularity is exactly how legacy systems survive. A software's core code base might be decades old, but if the architecture is open, the community can bolt on modern cryptographic security. The fact that a webmail client originating in 1999 can seamlessly support physical hardware authentication keys in 2014 is a testament to brilliant forward-thinking software design.
They weren't just patching holes. They were continuously forging new armor.
Exactly.
But the biggest existential threat they faced wasn't about adding new features or even fighting off hackers. It was the relentless, never-ending battle for PHP compatibility.
Oh, PHP.
If you aren't familiar with PHP, think of it as the invisible foundational infrastructure of the web. It's the programming language that SquirrelMail and a massive percentage of all websites is built on.
But PHP updates over time to become faster and more secure.
Right.
When that foundation changes, the house sitting on top of it starts to crack. Code functions that were perfectly valid in PHP version 4 might trigger fatal application crashes in PHP version 5.
Upgrading PHP underneath a legacy application like SquirrelMail is like trying to swap out the concrete foundation of a house while the family is still living inside it making breakfast.
Yeah, you can track this grueling struggle perfectly through Paul Lesniewski's update logs.
In December 2012, he announces fixes for PHP 5.4, noting that community members helped identify critical issues, particularly with a module called the Mail Fetch plugin.
He begs the community, if you are running SquirrelMail under PHP 5.4, please help test and refine the patches.
He's relying entirely on crowdsourced quality assurance.
Right. There is no paid QA department running automated test suites. It is just server administrators around the world reporting what broke when they updated their systems.
And it never stops. Just a few months later, in May 2013, he announces that fixes for PHP 5.4 and PHP 5.5 are live in their nightly snapshots.
Nightly snapshots are versions of the software compiled automatically every single day, containing the absolute bleeding-edge code the developers just wrote.
It's raw, it might contain new bugs, but it's the fastest way to get fixes out to the testers on the front lines. Here's where it gets really interesting. We follow these updates from 2011, 2012, 2013, and then there's a massive leap in the sources. I was stunned looking at the logs from October 16th, 2021.
That's a huge jump.
Almost a full decade after their SourceForge nomination, Paul Lesniewski writes that the nightly snapshots for versions 1.4.23 and 1.5.2 include compatibility for the newest versions of PHP 8.
PHP 8 is a massive generational leap in the programming language. Most commercial software vendors would have forcibly retired their product,
categorized it as end of life, and demanded you buy an entirely new application by then?
Absolutely. But in the open source world, as long as someone cares enough to write the code, the software breathes another day.
The lifespan of a web application is directly tied to that underlying infrastructure.
And the community's willingness to constantly rewrite their own foundation to keep up with PHP 8, patching code for a software project that predates Wikipedia, well, it's an astonishing level of dedication.
So, what does this all mean? When we step back and look at this two-decade stack of logs, updates, and community pleas, what is the ultimate takeaway?
I think SquirrelMail isn't just an email client. It is a historical monument to open source resilience.
Yeah.
It represents an era and a continuing philosophy where extreme customizability and independence were the ultimate goals.
Yes, you might have to drop into a command line to repair a database level folder structure. But you also get robust plugin integration, allowing you to seamlessly add hardware security keys to a legacy interface.
It is software built by and for those who are willing to chop their own wood to maintain their independence.
Which brings us right back to our sponsor, SafeServer. That desire for independence, for not being locked into expensive proprietary giants like Microsoft Exchange or Google Workspace, is more relevant today than ever before.
Organizations, businesses, and associations need to know exactly where their data is and who controls it.
The compliance and legal requirements around data protection are only growing stricter.
Having total authority over your data infrastructure isn't just a philosophical preference anymore. For many industries, it is a strict legal mandate.
And organizations stand to gain immense cost savings by making the switch to open source alternatives. Crucially, you don't have to navigate those command line updates and database queries alone.
Right.
SafeServer can be commissioned for consulting to help you find, implement, and run the right open source solution for your exact needs, whether that's a classic application like we discussed today or a comparable modern alternative.
They get you set up and running securely on German servers, turning that complex open source friction into a smooth, managed operation.
You can find out more by visiting www.safeserver.de.
You know, this raises an important question.
Yeah.
We spend so much time worrying about artificial intelligence taking over or massive corporate algorithms controlling our feeds.
Right.
But when we look at projects like Squirrel Mail, driven entirely by bounties, donations, and volunteer developers patching PHP compatibility late into the night, it highlights a very different vulnerability.
It leaves you with a slightly unsettling thought. A massive chunk of our global communications infrastructure currently relies on the goodwill of unpaid volunteers writing code on a Tuesday night.
What happens to the internet if they just decide to log off?
Something to think about the next time you hit send. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.